See more innovation in packaging and processing at Pack Expo International than anywhere else in the world. It's the show that defines where the industry is headed, with the solutions that define where your business can go. Discover cutting-edge packaging technology, processing equipment, new materials, sustainable solutions, supply chain resources, and much, much more. You'll walk away with innovative solutions to challenges big and small. Register at PackExpoInternational.com. You're listening to Unpacked with PMMI, where we share the latest packaging and processing industry insights, research, and innovations to help you advance your business. Hi, and welcome to another episode of Unpacked with PMMI. I'm your host, Sean Riley. Today, we welcome back author and generation expert, Jason Dorsey. He's fresh off his best-selling book, Zeconomy, How Gen Z Will Change the Future of Business and What to Do About It. And already hear the groans from the baby boomers and Generation X. But I assure you, this is something we all need to pay attention to. Jason brings his years of experience studying generation kinetics to filter out the noise around generations and how they work and what works and what doesn't work, and lays out plainly how everyone from baby boomers to millennials need to adapt to work with each other for the common goal that is good business practices. Let's have a listen. So with all the fancy introductions out of the way, we'd like to welcome back to the podcast, Jason Dorsey. Welcome, Jason.
Thanks. Thrilled to be back and back at y'all's amazing event and a part of your great organization. So thank you, as always, for having me and all the great conversations that you advance through the podcast. So glad to be here. Go team.
We appreciate it. And we appreciate the enthusiasm. I saw your presentation, and it's got to be a jolt for some of our people to be that enthusiastic that early in the morning. But again, we all appreciate it.
It was a lot of fun. Everybody's excited to be here. And, you know, I think there's a real desire to learn new insights and strategies and practical actions that people can take back to their businesses. And it's fun to be able to deliver that, and with a lot of laughs, of course.
Absolutely. It's anything but dry. Let's put it that way.
Thank you.
So I guess sort of jump in with something that you spoke about. There was three things that you mentioned that are really important to talk about up front. I don't know if it would be, if you're saying this from the hiring process, talk about it that soon. But could you just touch on those and kind of go through those again? Those three, I know the first one was salary range. Those three things that are real important to get to up front.
Yeah, absolutely. We've done a variety of research studies and also looked at lots and lots of data from companies, including many manufacturing companies, trying to figure out and solve the challenge of how do you get people's attention when they're looking for a job so that they actually apply. And this is something that's incredibly important to me because, as you heard in my speech, and as I say every time I speak to companies, manufacturing, leadership, you name it, we can't hire people who don't apply. So
yeah, exactly.
We got to solve that riddle. And what we found is that in the first paragraph, you need to have three elements to really drive people to read the rest of the job application. And that's interesting because most people are looking for job postings on a mobile device. So remember, they're scrolling, so we want to really grab their attention. And the three things that we discovered you have to include in that first paragraph, first one is salary range. And a lot of people immediately go, oh, I don't want to do that. I don't want them to know. But the reality is you don't have to show it. You just won't get applicants because they want to know it's worth their time to consider working for you. And most people think about that through the lens of, well, they care deeply about the higher end of the spectrum. And the reality is it's actually the lower end of the spectrum that matters the most, because people want to know the minimum they could earn. And then when it comes to the higher end of the spectrum, what we found is a great way to have that conversation is, of course, they go, oh, I want the higher end of the spectrum. And then you say, well, great. These are the three things that the people at the high end of the spectrum have done. Could be work experience, responsibilities, outcomes, et cetera. Do you meet those three things? Most people will say no. And that then creates a constructive conversation that also removes the pressure to come in at the high part of that salary range. So first is we want to put the salary range in the first paragraph. Second part is you want to have scheduling flexibility or show what kind of scheduling flexibility you could offer. Many people, again, misread this and they think, oh, well, scheduling flexibility means they don't want to work on Fridays or, you know, whatever. That usually they think, oh, it's a 4-day week, that sort of thing. But that's not mm-hmm. what our research has found. What our research has found is that most people just wanted some flexibility in the hours per day. So maybe instead of working from 8 to 5, they want to do 7 to 4 so they can pick their child up from school, or they want to do 9 to 6 so that they can take their child to school. And what we found is if you can just offer a slight variation, 1-2 hours of those work hours in terms of starting later, earlier, you'll get a lot more applicants. Now, in fact, I didn't share this when I was speaking today, but one of the executives came up to me afterwards in the hall and was like, "Jason, you know, we do exactly what you said and it works so well." He said, "We let people pick, do they want to start at 7, 8, or 9? And then we just adjust based on that. And we get much higher show ups because we're doing that." So that's where the scheduling flexibility comes in. And then the third one is benefits, but benefits come with a twist. Older generations, you know, I'm a behavioral researcher and we study generations and we study all kinds of workforce trends and tech trends and marketing and all these things. Older generations typically say the word benefits and know what that means or attach a meaning to it. Why? Because they've worked for decades. Of course they know what it means. Younger generations know benefits are important, but they don't actually know what benefits mean or what benefits could be included. And what we find is a lot of times older leaders don't necessarily sort of talk about all the benefits because they assume that the younger generation may not want to know. But what our research has shown repeatedly, we've seen this in our Z Economy book that I know you mentioned in the intro. We see this in our State of Gen Z studies every year. Gen Z, which is now up to age 27, cares deeply about benefits. In particular, what they want to know is about, do you offer free mental health services? Because they just still are coming out of this horrendous pandemic and there's a lot of mental health challenges that we want to be able to be a resource for. And second, they care deeply about retirement because they know they won't have Social Security. So when you put all that together, if you're going to talk about benefits, you have to explain what those benefits are at the top of the job posting. That way you get people to ultimately start the application. And then there's a bunch of other tricks we can do to get them to finish it. But fundamentally, look at your job postings and then go, wow, am I talking about salary range, scheduling flexibility, and then benefits? And if you're not, and you're putting all at the bottom, just know people aren't reading to the bottom. They're reading that first paragraph, and that's where we want to attract their attention, get them excited about why you could be a great fit to hire them.
You saying it out loud, it just seems like such common sense, and I'm thinking of going, you know, back in the day through, you know, job postings and things like that, and I never understood. I still don't understand, and I guess it's an American thing, what the hang up is about salary. Like, what is the, do you, with your research and like, is it just, is it an American capitalist type thing where like talking about salary is such a third rail?
Well, I think historically it's a few things. One is, historically you didn't talk about money in public. So some people didn't want to put it out there.
Right.
The bigger really underlying behavioral driver is that people feel that if I don't, well, there's two ways. One is they feel like if I don't post salary, maybe we'll get applicants, because it could be anything. So maybe they're just being more open-minded. We know that's not true. Through research, the other is they think, oh, well, if I don't post a salary range, it gives me as an employer more leverage in negotiating, and maybe I can get you for a lower rate.
Right.
The problem with that, which again, this happened just in the hallway right outside where we're doing this interview. One of the, a different employer came up and was saying, "Jason, you know, I need to know how to deal with this." He was based in Florida, and he was sharing that his new employees, his new hires, are getting paid as much as his really experienced, and the really experienced ones are, you know, frankly, in his eyes, better performers during my work. He's like, how do I deal with that? And I'm like, well, what we're seeing is you have to give the more experienced ones a raise because they will talk. There's no way they're not going to, and then you'll get resentment. So some of that was, well, people aren't going to talk about what they make. Well, the reality is they do now. And so, yeah, it's creating a lot of wage pressure.
Uh-huh.
But in my view, as an employer, I want to attract the best employees I can. I want to be very fair with all of my employees, which means consistency and also transparency. So that's what he was saying, is he's going to have to create raises for his more experienced ones to then again show a pathway for the new hires, but also really value the more experience. So all of that sort of wrapped up in this wage conversation, particularly in such an inflationary time. But it's a real situation and challenge that has to be addressed. And I believe as you see more states push for salary transparency, at least salary ranges, it's going to become less and less taboo or less and less of a secret and more of just, that's just something you've got to put out there in order to be part of the employment conversation.
Yeah. And it's a conversation for another podcast, and it would be a longer conversation probably, but it makes me, I don't know, chuckle, I guess. And I don't run a company, so I guess it's easy for me to say, But when a person asks something like that, you know, but then my people that have been here for a while want to be paid a fair amount as the people that were hired. And you kind of think to yourself, well, yes, they both want to be paid fairly. So I guess you have to pay them fairly.
Yeah. And that's really one of the biggest risks in the workforce today. I did not talk about this today, but I do a lot at for leaders and for companies that have a hybrid workforce, that one of the biggest risks out there is defining the word fair and, like, you know, this concept of fairness in the workplace. And a lot of times people sort of had the assumption that, look, it's just not fair. But now what we're seeing is a real push for transparency and consistency and fairness and all these other elements. And that's not going away. It's not going to, you know, be a fad that in 3 or 5 years doesn't matter anymore. If anything, it's rising more to the top with transparency and all the other things that go with technology. So my belief is you want to get on board. And, you know, if you're not going to be a pioneer in the space, at least you can be a leader or part of that group. And that will serve you better over a long period of time.
One of the things that you touched on with your three things that you kind of want to get up front was on mental health, which sort of ties into another thing you talked about, which was the kind of people bring their life to work with them as it is part of their life. How do you get, like, what's the easiest advice or how do you get upper management who is typically one of the older generations or has come up a different way? How can companies learn to get their upper management to understand that this work-life balance is super important to their employees and they're going to come in and they're going to talk about it? So how do you, or what's the best way to sort of get that to the upper management to sort of understand that, unfortunately for them, unfortunately for the workers, it's great that this is just the way it is now.
Yeah. The you know, people don't like to talk about mental health, but the reality is not just in the US, around the world, we have a mental health crisis. We've just gone through a horrendous pandemic. The youngest generation, Gen Z, you know, crashed into it, was introduced to mortality at a much younger age and also in a much more significant emotionally driven way, given sort of the scale of it, and that they were constantly bombarded with it with social media. Add on social distancing, which upended how people normally build relationships and sense of isolation, and we go through a whole long list. And essentially what you end up with is this mental health crisis, which we're seeing play out, unfortunately, all around the world. At the same time, you have a generation, and this started with millennials, but it's continued with Gen Z, that thinks, you know, you don't leave your personal life at the door when you walk into work. You bring your whole self to work and you bring your personal life to work. And managers have really struggled with this, right? They're bringing, you know, whatever's going on at home or whatever's on their mind directly to work. And how do you deal with this? And what we've learned at our research center is the absolute best solution. And we believe that every company should offer it. You know, we're a small business at our research center, Center for Generational Kinetics. And then there's other companies we work with that have hundreds of thousands of employees, and they've reached the same conclusion. And that is, you have to offer free mental health services to your employees, and if possible, to your employees and a significant other. And the reason is, one, most managers, leaders, and execs are not mental health professionals. So even if an employee brings a problem to you, they're not really skilled in knowing how to deal with that. At the same time, there's a lot of liability trying to solve for that with them. And mental health services, sometimes these are considered an employee assistance program. There's different ways, but basically it's really inexpensive for companies to offer, very, very inexpensive. And what's really cool is it's anonymous. So usually you just find out somebody used the service. You don't know who, but somebody did it. And for me, I celebrate every time one of our employees does that, right? That means they reached out or their significant other.
Sure.
And part of it is the reason you want to, if possible, offer it for their significant other family is if they've got a problem with their family, something going on there, they're going to bring it right to work. And when you mention like work-life balance and these things, we see that the younger generation thinks they're going to have to work forever because they don't believe they're going to get Social Security. They don't believe there's going to be government safety nets or social support at that time. So the reality is they're going to be working forever. And as part of that, if I'm going to work forever, if you say, okay, you're 22 and you're going to work for 50 or 60 years, that really changes how you think about work, how you think about, you know, working on weekends or coming in early or staying late. And it just gives you sort of a different frame of reference. And we believe that employers can best address this, again, by offering these free mental health services as a benefit and other resources, and being mindful that sort of the employee contract these days is very different than maybe it was 20, 30, 40 years ago, dramatically different, frankly. And the better they realize that, the better they're going to be able to attract and keep and also engage and really unlock the potential of their employees. So we're big advocates for that. Thanks for asking about it, by the way. As you can tell, I'm very passionate about that.
No, and as you should be, and I am as well. And that's why when I heard it mentioned multiple times, I was very happy to hear that it is something that you're spreading, you know, the gospel of sort of to higher ups, because it is something that is, you know, coming out of what we've come out of in the last 3 years is something, you know, it's crucial. It's crucial to just humanity, I guess, is kind of how I look at it.
Yeah. And we see older generations using the same services. So even though Gen Z and millennials may be more vocal about it because it's much more acceptable among that mm-hmm. generation to talk about it, since it's anonymous, we see every generation using it. And look, there's a lot of parents and grandparents out there that are struggling, and people that are just, you know, not where they thought they would want to be. And they're doing the best they can with the tools that they have. But they would love to get some help. So I really think this is one of those solutions that should, you know, become a table stakes kind of benefit at every company.
Awesome. So I guess this is something that sort of ties to that, but, and maybe it's just a flashpoint type thing, or call it clickbait, or it's an easy way to get people to watch your show on TV or your newscast. But why, what is the continued, I'm on the, you know, I'm Gen X. We're the ones that don't get talked about, which is fine. But
you also asked the most questions, so right on brand.
Exactly. So exactly, funny. Right? I know how to play this. But what I'm wondering is how is this, it's still a thing where millennials and Gen Z are just like these awful enemy, not the enemy, but like are just perceived so wrongly by just mainstream media, let's say.
Well, you know, when we think about sort of news at a higher level, there's a combination between entertainment, shock value, and fact. And fact may be a loose term depending on
yeah,
what we're
right.
looking at. But what ultimately media platforms are trying to do is, you know, pull people in, keep them engaged, and then, you know, present a point of view. And the generations, particularly the generational divide or gap or differences, is very emotionally charged. It's a really, really strong topic that everybody has an opinion on, because frankly, we're all in a generation, and, you know, we may not like the generation that people think about us in, or, you know, other generations. So you're taking sort of the age old sort of age collision, if you will, you know, that has been going on since, you know, the beginning, right? And now you're yes. just giving it names and personas. The challenge is that fact no longer matches the storyline. And we founded our research center solely to separate myth from truth about generations. That's how we founded it. And that was the start. It's now changed to focus on driving these measurable outcomes in recruiting, retention, and marketing and sales. But originally, it was just to separate myth from truth, because we suspected that so much of what was being said about generations wasn't true, but there wasn't any real statistically accurate data to just sort of see what was true. And there was some truth, there always is some, but it wasn't nearly what sort of the headline said. Unfortunately, those, particularly with social media, that has continued. Now, there is some movement from millennials to Gen Z, and, you know, that now we're focusing on the next generation, which we should, by the way, because they're driving new trends. But a lot of the commentary is extremely negative, and that's what frustrates me. I believe every generation's important. Every generation's equally valuable. Every generation brings something important to the world, and we need them. And as soon as we make it negative or divisive, which unfortunately plays better in terms of clickbait, then you pull people in, which then becomes sort of this virtuous cycle where, oh, I saw it here, it's got to be true, and you see it enough, and then you believe it. It's sort of like we work with executives. In fact, even how we started our research center, I was speaking to this board of directors and this big public company, and the CEO was saying how terrible his millennial engineers were. And I didn't know any better. This was like, I guess about 15 years ago, I think. And I asked, well, can I see your data? Maybe if I look at the data, I can come up with some ideas or answers. And they sent me their data a few weeks later. And I was going through the data at home, and my wife walks in. My wife has a PhD. And so she came in and she's like, what's going on? I said, well, I'm confused. I don't know what to do. I'm looking at the data that this company provided. The CEO said his millennial engineers were terrible. And when I look at their data, that's just not true. In fact, they're doing great. They're moving into management roles. They're doing all these wonderful things. Like, it's not what's true. And I said, what do you think we should do? And Denise, my wife, said, well, we should start a research firm. Because if the CEO of the big public company doesn't understand his own data, imagine if we gave him data he could actually use. That's the actual story of how we started the firm. And what we later put a name to it, we call it generations by proxy, which is people have an experience with someone in a generation, and then they assign that sort of whole generation to that one or a limited window of experience. Could be their kids, could be that one employee who wouldn't work on their birthday, you know, or the one who brought their mom to work. Like, and then suddenly the whole generation looks like that.
Yeah.
But when we do these generational snapshots, which I talked about today, where you take your workforce and you create sort of this generational pie chart, people are stunned to see how many managers they have who are great millennials and even executives. And, you know, they find out that Gen Z is staying longer and all these things. And so what we try to do is combat this fiction and some of the sensationalized headlines with fact and data so that we can have a more informed and constructive conversation.
Awesome. Now, I personally could talk to you all day, but we have a limited amount of time as you have a company to run and a family to go home to, so I will not do that. But I do urge all of our listeners to check out some of Jason's some of his research and definitely get his book, as I mentioned up in the intro. He's a great listen, and he really speaks. He brings it down to simplified terms for the rest of us to understand.
I love his work.
Yeah, on kind of how these things how all of these things work. So I just want to thank you again, Jason, for coming back on the podcast.
Yeah, thank you so much. I love this conversation. And for any of your amazing listeners, you know, we give away a lot of our research for free. They can download it right off our website, which is GenHQ, GenHQ.com. And if you go to my website, which is just my name, JasonDorsey.com, you can download free chapters of the Z Economy book. We love to just give that away so people have a good, accurate foundation. And then if anyone wants to reach out to me, besides the websites, you can just reach out to me on LinkedIn or follow me on LinkedIn. We release our research there frequently and new insights and strategies. And just, you know, for me, my mission is to carry on this conversation in a way that raises the conversation around the world. So it'd be an honor to connect with any of your listeners. You know how much I care about this industry and the important work that y'all do every day. So thanks again for having me on. Really been an honor.
Please rate, review, and subscribe. To do that, go to the iTunes podcast or Spotify app on your phone and search for Unpacked with PMMI.